Okay, I just sent it out. Hello, everyone. Shana Tova. For those of you who don't know me, even though I know you all do because of all the confusion recently in that email, I'm Lisa Lorraine Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And I am so honored, and I say this, but it's so true, that I am able to work with Elaine, Dr. Elaine Rotenberg, as the chair of the Clinical Services Affinity Group. You know, she's one of the first people who even thought that we should have affinity groups here at the network, just FYI for all of you. And Clinical Services was one of the first ones. And now we have 26.
Oh my God.
And it's growing. And that's why I'm going bananas, but that's not what should be on this recording. I love my job, which is true. Okay, so Elaine, take it away.
I love my job and I love Lisa, you know, who knew? So we don't have a lot of people on the line today here, which is like really totally fine, because sometimes I think that being on like 12 Zoom meetings a day with 20 people in every phone call or whatever it is, sometimes it's really nice when you have like a, watch, I'll say that and 30 people will jump on. It's really nice when you have like a little small opportunity to talk to people, because somehow it feels a little more intimate. And so when I'm running a group, I've taken to doing what I'm about to say to all of you, since the group is small right now, which is unmute yourselves. It's so wonderful to have a room where I can say unmute yourselves, because let's just have conversation, which, you know, we don't have to, you know how great it's going to be in this meeting right now and not have to say, Emma, we can't hear you, unmute yourself. So I am asking you all right now, as the chair of this affinity group, to unmute yourselves, please. And let's just like talk as if we're like humans.
And there I just want to say that my very first social work supervisor, and this is over 30 years ago, said to me when I was a student that every small group is a gift. And
it is. Jeremy, unmute yourself.
He's eating.
Okay. He doesn't want to eat.
Yeah, I'm eating too, so I might.
You can. It's okay. It's all right. I don't care. We can hear chews and burps and stuff that happen in the real world. So, it's being recorded. A lot of pressure. Okay. So what I wanted to do today was, number one, for those of you who did come to the telemental health, I hope it was helpful. Hopefully, you were there, Rachel, right? Hopefully,
I don't know about that one.
Okay, so it's what it is that is a, I don't know if there's going to be sent out again. That came through.
Yeah, everyone can have an opportunity to join for each one, and we can send it out. Who said that? Karen?
Jane did.
Jane, okay,
so,
Jane.
So there's a series of five separate, they each are standalones because some of them haven't even been written yet, but they're all standalones in terms of the presentations, the content. The first one was kind of like a 101. And those comments or questions, if you had things related to that, I'm sure between all of us in this group, we could staff those here and come up with answers and help you with those. The next one, I think, is on supervision and training related to that. And then there's one on risk, and I think one on counter transference, one on couples and families. So, you know, it's just
all telehealth.
Yeah, all telehealth and how you do that sort of stuff and issues that have come up related to that. So CE certificates, yeah, you can. There are CE certificates for that. And I think for psychologists also, didn't we get that, Lisa?
Yeah.
I think that's the case as well. So I don't know when the certificates, are you waiting? Are the certificates being sent out at the end of the whole series or after?
I don't know. Megan will... I think it's at the end of the whole series. I'm not really sure.
Okay, so we don't know the answer to that. So just a little, just to kind of let you guys know, and that is really to be shared with anybody on your staff. And the other thing, it doesn't just have to be for your clinical staff. I mean, certainly issues about like risk and telehealth and, you know, whether you have case managers in your agencies or people in other programs that are working virtually. I find that the more we're just like having dialogue about these things, we're sort of backing into learning what the heck we're doing, which was the reason why we decided to back it down, to move it forward and to do this whole series anyhow. And it was, I thought it was remarkable to just have what felt like such basic information, just so valuable to people. So that's, I think we it's kind of like a learning. I always reteach myself the fact that when you teach or learn something that you think is so basic, it's really not. It's like people really want to hear. We have so much data in our heads that, you know, if somebody sits down and says, this is what I statements are and how they're important for assertiveness. I mean, you sit there and you're like taking notes as if it's brand new news. Because you know what I'm saying? I mean, I really believe that. I think we're just like inundated. So who's an interloper? Sandra, you know, just because you're an interloper doesn't mean we can't see your face. Is that why you're not showing yourself right now? I mean, I don't mean to sound too shrinky, but you know.
But Sandra, I want to say that this session will not be about any of what you're thinking.
Correct.
HIPAA billing, telehealth. This is a clinical services Correct. Professionals group.
So slipping.
I'm not sure this is what you want. I'm just saying that.
But you're totally welcome. All interlopers are welcome. So yeah. What, anyhow, so that's what's coming up with that. And feel free to invite anybody from your agencies. What we want to do today, what I thought would be really nice, and since we have kind of a small group of us here, would be to really talk some about, which we haven't yet, about what people are noticing and experiencing and kind of tips of the trade and challenges and experiences related to what's going on with kids right now, with kids and families, and particularly with some of the challenges with, you know, kids going back to school virtually. I don't know which of you in your agencies have child programs, how that's going, and if there are particular topics related to that that you wanted to throw out, I'm happy to facilitate that discussion today for us. So I'm going to just be quiet and let you guys jump in.
I'll start.
Okay, Rachel.
We see kids school age and up. So I'll say generally, our child adolescent therapist has over the last 6 months struggled with the younger kids. And we don't see very young children, so we don't see anybody really under school age, but even like the 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, that's been an area that is more challenging for us, just engaging with telehealth, depending on the child. But over the summer, we had some drop-off in that age group. And what I've been trying to do in supervision is really help the therapist increase the structure and make sure that they are working with the parent on creating a quiet place and really reinforcing that, because I think we started at the beginning there and then things got a little bit crazy where the kid was, you know, just sort of handed the iPad. But that age, the younger kids have been a challenge. But then more recently, here in Mecklenburg County, all the schools have been completely remote, the public schools. So the private schools are able to do a hybrid or whatever they want. They can go back in person. But our public school system is still totally remote. And we've seen extreme anxiety, panic, depression, a lot of increased symptoms with our kids and teens since school started. I've gotten a lot of influx of returning clients that were actually doing okay, and now they're really struggling with the distance learning. And parents, as you can imagine, are struggling with distance learning. An example I'll give you, and then I'll stop. We have a 17-year-old client who had been doing really well, but mom works outside the home, so she's now in charge of her 6-year-old brother during distance learning, and she's trying to like take AP classes. She's failing everything, and she's home trying to get her 6-year-old brother online, and she's extremely distressed and has went from doing really well to having panic attacks and SI return. So that's kind of some of the stuff that we're seeing in Charlotte.
Oh, Rachel, that's a very interesting one. I actually don't think I've really thought about the teenage babysitters taking on that responsibility. Are other people seeing that?
Yes.
Imagine when parents have to go back, they're taking on the parental role, and it's, you know, parents can barely do it. So
right.
That is a tough one.
So
it's like older siblings also taking on those responsibilities, which kind of reinforces like already parentified issues that happen within families. And so those particular teenagers or siblings who are already in parentified roles are now feeling the same sorts of stresses that our parents are, like having that pressure from below, from kids and responsibilities, and the pressure from above, from jobs and employment and all of the macro issues. And so now we have 14, 15, 16-year-olds acting like they're 40-year-olds trying to manage all the important things of a family. And it's really been difficult.
Right, and 40-year-olds can barely manage it.
But that's really
I'm struggling, yeah.
So Jeremy,
So Jeremy, so talk a little bit about your program there in terms of work with kids and stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, so Jewish Collaborative Services doesn't have a kids program, not right now anyways. Some of our clinicians will see adolescents. I'm more talking from my own private practice experience. So that I see primarily children and families. So when I given that bit of feedback, that's what I've been experiencing from clients that I was seeing or have been seeing pre-COVID and then throughout this whole time. And that's been the marked change, has been these older siblings now having to end the spring, getting into summer with having to teach their younger kids how to the ropes of remote learning. And then the summer was preparing them for the eventuality of my mom's going back to work or my parent is going to be unavailable to do this kind of support. Well, I guess I'm going to have to teach kindergarten this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on top of them being a sixth and seventh or eighth grader. So I've been seeing that quite a bit here. We're just working a lot with the families that are impacted by trauma and domestic violence and just feeling shut up in their homes.
That's a whole
lot
other
of helplessness.
Issue.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, that stuff translates down because the parents are feeling like they're stuck at home and then stuck between like those pressures above and below. And so the kids are feeling it too. So in treatment, whether it be remote and I'm in my practice doing a little bit more in-person stuff, particularly for the younger kiddos, that has been really, really helpful. Like those kids have learned now in the last maybe 3 to 4 weeks that I've been doing in person for kids that are 6 and 7 years old, they have learned to say, wow, okay, finally I'm back to doing this work that I remember doing. And they really maximize the time, like whether it's play therapy or whether it's just like skills-based stuff.
Suddenly
like
they love it.
Right. You know, I was at Dr. Dan Shapiro's thing yesterday, which was wonderful. Yeah. And I do a lot of very similar things that he does. Mm-hmm. And the kiddos are just like, oh, you know, I haven't had this kind of feedback in such a long time. Or I haven't had somebody really listen to me in such a way. Mm-hmm. That happens in therapy with clinicians. So it's, you know, so I've had to really be creative in how I'm using Zoom or the other video conferencing apps to engage with kids using as much technology as I can. I'm going back to like my old school, like video gaming type stuff. So I'm using my PlayStation 4 and Xbox One to reach out to kids. I'm doing social right now. I'm doing social skills groups using like Call of Duty, albeit violent games, Fortnite, Apex is another game that I've been playing a lot. All the sports.
All of you know what he's talking about.
He started rattling them off really quickly. Yeah.
You've heard of Teachers Pay Teachers?
Yeah, yep.
So they have a virtual play therapy room.
What's it called?
Oh, neat.
Wait, what's it called? We need to know about that, Jane. What's it called?
It's called Teachers Pay Teachers. Mm-hmm. And they have a virtual play therapy room that you can use to literally do on Zoom.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it cost money or is it free?
It was like $40, I think, for the basic model. And then they have like a sand tray. They have all these things. And I was amazed at how reasonably priced they were.
How do you use that? So like say you're on Zoom. So how do you do this?
You want to share your screen?
I'm going to pull it up for you.
So interesting. That's why I love this group, you know, for us, because, you know, you learn new things that you could use in your,
right,
you know, offices.
And that we can take back to our teams. Right. I knew you guys would have things about kids to tell us.
Right. So Elaine and I, while you're doing that, went to some very exclusive conference. And it was a 3-hour conference. And she and I were going, is this new? We, you know, what are we learning? Like we couldn't We couldn't understand.
I already forgot what it was.
I know.
Teachers pay teachers. So this is, you found this, okay, virtual therapy.
So you can see they have all these different rooms, speech therapy and classrooms, and this one is for virtual therapy rooms. And so you it's done on Google Slides.
Okay.
For $10, okay.
Right, this is one for $10, exactly. I mean, some of the prices were amazing. I found this on Facebook.
So can you preview that? Like, click on preview. I'm not going to make you pay $10, but let's just see.
Don't worry.
You're not a member yet.
I don't think I am. Yeah. Lisa,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So basically, there are different things that kids can, click on and play with.
Yes. So yeah. What you can see here.
Right, or different things that they can play with, the teddy bear, or ice cream cone.
Well, here you have that Simon game.
Right.
And so if you click on the Simon game, it would pop up another link.
Right.
And give you the Simon game. Here you would have a dollhouse. If you click on that, it'll give you all these. And I know there's a way to see this because I was investigating it when I was looking for
it. It's good, Lisa, because I'm doing the session on kids and stuff, and I may figure out a way to share this at that session.
Yeah, well, I'll help you do that, Elaine.
Yeah, I have my niece right now working on trying to figure out how to fix it.
I have my 6-year-old grandson. Maybe he'll help me.
Okay, so we get that. That's great. What other kinds of things are there that people have found?
Yeah, and I want to, to your point, Lisa, one of the things that I heard Rachel say, and maybe the rest of you who spoke said also, that I also heard from my child staff, is that it's particularly difficult for those under 10. That they're having a hard time. Like once they get to be 10, they can kind of sit in a room like this and do some talk stuff, okay? So I'm curious about whether it sounds like that is sort of a shared experience that people are having and what.
I've done a lot of bibliotherapy.
With done what?
Bibliotherapy. And one of the things that I have, I ended up getting a lot of these books and I found this one thing. It took a long time to get it. It's Sigmund. And Sigmund is an amygdala. And so a lot of times what I do is I read the book. It comes with books. And one of the books is Hey Warrior. And the other one is Hey Awesome. And it just talks about the amygdala. And it goes through. And the whole thing is about this amygdala, the Sigmund. And so it's kind of a CBT thing on trauma and how the amygdala lights up and what it does to us. So that's been really helpful. Doing a lot of the bibliotherapy has been amazing.
I thought biblio you meant by some sort of reading biblio, but biblio. Yeah.
Oh, no, she does. She does. Do you read the book to them?
Yes, I do. I read the book to them. And I took this course by Anne Meehan, who has a whole, I think it's 5 credits or something that you can get. And she went through all these different books, and then she has different projects you can do with the child after the book.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, what's her name?
We need those books and those projects. But yeah. I'm looking at amygdala. I was just looking it up, so I guess you all know what that is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, everyone does. The almond-shaped clusters of nuclei located deep
part of your brain.
Part of your brain, which is the primary role in the processing of memory, decision making, and emotional responses, including fear, anxiety.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So that
and aggression was, and aggression.
That was a great find. I felt.
That's kind of nice. You know, that might be interesting. You know, what I'm thinking about is this as resources, resources that even in our agencies, like thinking about how we all, some of us, like we have a play therapy room. Well, instead of a play therapy room right now, what do we need to purchase to make our virtual children's world?
Right.
Like, so we may need an amygdala biblio set for some of the therapists to use, and
But here's the other thing. A lot of these books are on YouTube. You put them on YouTube, you read, let the YouTube thing read the book to the child, and then you do the exercise with the child afterwards. I mean, it's just a great idea.
Yeah. Say that again.
A lot of these books are on YouTube.
Right.
And they read them on YouTube. So you don't even have to purchase the book. The book's already on YouTube.
Right. So 100%. Yep. So you give them that as their assignment.
No, you read it, you watch
it in the session, but you have the activity that.
And then what I do a lot of times with the activity, like this one here, this is the color monster, and there's an exercise where they have these different feelings and emotions, and then they have to choose how much they feel it. So if it's that much, that kind of thing. So what I'll do is I'll use my whiteboard and I'll have them give them remote control of my Zoom and let them draw their jars and how filled is their jar with fear? How filled is their jar with, so they're separating each of their emotions.
Okay, I've got an idea, potentially.
I love this.
How about you doing a webinar for us or the next time we meet, you could do something, for us. That sounds
great. Where are you? Here you go, Jane. We're going to do that. Here's your whiteboard. So if you could control it, go ahead and do it.
You have to give me remote control.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Right, so you can. I can give it to her. I think.
No, I can too.
Okay.
Okay, Jane. I think I did.
Okay.
Okay, so Jane, show us how scared you feel today.
So it looks like you have it on text, and I need it on drawing.
Okay.
I don't have the option to touch that one.
How about now?
No, still on text.
That's interesting. Okay, so how about now?
There we go. There we go. So
show me how scared you are, Jane.
Okay, here's my drawing. And my jar is filled up to here with fear.
Wow.
Or the other option is you can draw a body.
Right.
And then they would tell me, I would say, okay. Tell me where in your body are you feeling that fear?
Right
here. Tell me where.
Basically, you're doing the same things that you might do
in your session.
Like what Jeremy was saying, doing it, trying to find creative ways to do it via Zoom or in your tele. Excellent.
Yeah, so I think one of the things, let me stop sharing. So I think one of the things, and I was hoping that we would have some of this conversation today because I think that between all of our minds, people have been experiencing in terms of kids stuff, like sort of, especially like kind of newer therapists, like how do I work with the real little kids that I would be sitting with in play therapy? And so one thing we're even talking about is kind of sharing, sharing whiteboards and letting them sit and draw with you.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Rachel, go ahead.
So another kind of lower tech thing, especially for a younger kid who might not be able to do the technology, is we talk to the parent in advance and we ask if they have markers or crayons and paper. And we ask that when they're set up that they have the markers and crayons and paper, or do you have Play-Doh? Okay, can you have the Play-Doh? So it's kind of like way back when I did in-home therapy a long time ago, I came with my little kit. So now we're asking the parents, and it's really simple stuff that they probably have or some version of what they have there. So, do you have, like this summer, do you have any bubbles in the house? Okay, we're going to do deep breathing and we're going to use bubbles. And if they don't have bubbles, can you get bubbles? And if you can't get bubbles, it's okay. But paper, markers, pretty much everybody has that. So we've been doing similar to, feelings in the body, but I'm drawing it on my paper, you're drawing it on your paper, and then we're showing it to each other.
Right.
So again, it kind of though, it goes back to the buy-in from the parent. And that is where we were, and maybe the distance learning is gonna help with this because they're gonna be getting more used to having the kids set up somewhere where they have to have their things with them. But what we struggled with over the summer is we would say that and the parent would say, okay. And then session would start and the kids walking around with the iPad and they're not, so it was, you know, and we, that was kind of the challenge. So in a way, distance learning for us might help because it might kind of, we might be able to equate it back to that. But in a best case scenario, that's what we've been trying to do.
Right.
It hasn't always worked that way. It's been, you know,
No, it's interesting because I think that that piece, and it's interesting, one of the things that I've been thinking about is that that is a huge difference in terms of the child therapy. So it's almost like, it's interesting, it's almost like the, in some ways, the other end of the extreme where you have the parentified 16 and 17 year olds who find themselves like, in the role because they're home with the kid all the time. Now, in the case of therapy with the younger kids, as opposed to that is therapy with the older kids, helping those older kids sort of de-parentify in some ways, right? But with these younger kids, it's interesting because it sort of forces the issue of, compels the issue, if you will, of having the parent have to take parental responsibility in a way that sometimes when they just drop their kid off in the therapy office, expecting that you're gonna fix the kid, you got a lot of disengaged parents sometimes in child therapy. So hoping for that to work. So your point is very interesting. You know, mm-hmm. I like that idea of the kit in advance. I have one of my child therapists that she's a big Skittles person. And so she asked the parent if they don't mind, even though it's got sugar in it, if they could have Skittles at part of the therapy session and each color is like a different feeling. Mm-hmm. And so they talk about something and then they have to, the child gets asked to like kind of, you know, pick the Skittle that, you know, let's share what they're feeling about what that topic was that they were talking about or whatever that might be. Right. But I think what Sandra's real interactive. Hi, Wendy.
So Sandra, let us know where you're from, Wendy, just to change your name. From Winnipeg posted a book there. Do you use that? Where are you, Sandra?
Hi, I'm here. Hi.
Hello. You want to tell us anything about that?
Sure, yes. It's a book that I've been, this is my first meeting, so.
Welcome.
Tell us more.
Thanks. I'm a mental health caseworker for a Jewish child family in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm also, I just, in June, finished my master in marriage and family therapy. So I have my experience from the practicums with families, the 4-year practicum that I did. But I've been using this book a lot with children, and I haven't had a chance yet to do therapy with children on Zoom, like on video. But I think, like, thank you, Jane, because those were really good resources and techniques. And this book that I share is online, so it's something that I can also be done with children on video, yeah.
Terrific, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It's really good to get resources from all of you if you have any, you know, that's.
You know, I'm just scrolling through that book that you just put online. And it's interesting because it really explains the amygdala and it talks about fight and flight. And it has a child in a wheelchair also.
Yeah, it's kind of inclusive in many aspects.
Yeah.
And I like when I talk with kids about it, I ask them to point out which one kind of connects with them. And sometimes we even do all of the different ways to deal with it, like of the coping ways, we try all of them and then I ask them which one felt more in sync kind of with them. So yeah, I really like that book.
It's kind of a let me see you guys. I was off there. It's kind of a, looking at it, it's sort of a big book. Like I could see that that's like one page could be like one therapy session. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not a book that you read through during one session, is it, Sandra?
No.
Yeah. If you guys, I mean, it looks like it's a terrific resource. You could pick a page. Are you guys looking at it? I mean, it's interesting. Yeah. It's got a page or two just on kids and relaxation. You could, that could be a whole, like your whole therapy for like lifetime with a child. What other things have people noticed that is coming up now, or what's a challenge, or what's working well, or what you're totally stumped on in terms of stuff with kids and families right now that we can help each other with? Emma, what's going on in Austin with children and families?
Well, we're a pretty small JFS, so we don't currently have a clinician to see small children. We have a couple, maybe three adolescents that are seen by one of our clinicians. But within just the Jewish community in Austin, we're definitely seeing a need for support, a lot of stress on the families, on parents, on teachers too. And just trying to provide some psychoeducation out into the community to help people manage all of those different roles kind of being enmeshed, which I know many of us probably are experiencing or have experienced as well. So we're seeing a lot to support kids. I hear a lot of anecdotes about, older siblings, as we discussed earlier, taking on a little bit more of that parental role. And sort of losing out on their childhood experience and their school experience in some ways.
Mm-hmm. I was able to pull up this virtual therapy room if anybody is interested in seeing it.
Oh yeah, share with us. Because we have a small group today, so we can do that. Like, watch, everybody can say thumbs up. We want to share it. Okay. I want to be in therapy with you, Jane. Can I do it? I really need to be.
So here's
pickle.
And then each of these things that you click on, like this will be dress up. So it goes to a different, here's your dress up
thing. That's the kind of games that we used to play with my daughter when she was young in a way, right?
But who's clicking on that? You or the kid?
I am. But I wanted to show you all the different rooms here. Like here's the virtual therapy room. So they have this thing hanging up for feelings. They have all these different things and you can click on these.
Like let's click on the lava lamp.
It shows you, it has a link to a YouTube lava lamp.
Then what, you just watch it?
I guess it's a relaxation thing. 10 hours of relaxing lava lamp. So I haven't done like that. Like I said, this is
all. Have you used any of it, Jane?
No, I have. I'm trying to get my niece to fix it so that it would be geared towards my therapy, private practice type. And so that's where I'm at with this. Here you can click on the different books and it'll give you where it's,
So you probably, there's probably a way again that you share screen and give somebody else the ability to write on it, right?
I don't know. Like I said, this is just a new thing.
We have to all experience it.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So here's this one here. If you click, it sends you to a different screen. It's all these different things that you can do. I thought this was going to be drawing, but it's not. I don't know how that one works. And you have to be in the presentation presenting thing in order for these to even work. So there,
the name of it again is what?
You put it in the chat.
Is it in the chat?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, no, that one, that's the bibliotherapy one. This is Teachers Pay Teachers. I'll put that in there for you.
Well, thank you.
How fun is that?
What's Wendy doing in Detroit?
Having a lot of difficulties with the child therapists and the ADHD and anxiety with the COVID environment. And the teletherapy is very difficult for some of the young kids, of course.
Right. So that's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard.
What have they found that's most changed right now in terms of the work with the kids?
The parents are also working from home. So, of course, they're being bounced on by the kids, and the kids are having a difficult time returning back to either the virtual world with online schooling or the regular world. So it's just difficult. Kind of like we're talking about.
So are people feeling frustrated in your, are your staff feeling frustrated by they're not being able to make a dent, or what's, you sound a little frustrated. So I don't know if it's, you know, really hard.
It's just difficult. It's just challenging. My staff have had to pivot a lot, like you guys have had to, and just finding things virtually. Like one of my staff had found a scavenger hunt for her kids that she works with, and it works pretty well, but it's just difficult finding resources online versus in person.
Yeah. So if you know what that scavenger hunt is, let us know and we'll put it in the resource file. No, it's good for all of us. I'm going to put all this stuff in there for right. Some of the people who weren't here today.
You know, Jeremy, you said something that was like, I don't know if anybody heard it, but I did. And it just really connected for me with the other age's end of the spectrum was the idea that these 16 and 17 year olds and 14, 15, whatever, however, the teenagers, right? They are really experiencing loss of a big piece of their childhood or teenagehood. And what's so interesting to me about that is that I think depending on the age group, I mean, I know we're hearing that same thing from people at the older end of the age spectrum. Like, I mean, I don't know how many, I mean, I know we're talking about kids today, but it's so interesting to me because I've got some, have heard in the last month or so from 85 to 95 year olds in some of our groups, and they're saying things like, the healthy ones, the healthy active 85 to 95 year olds or to 100 year olds, you know, it's Florida, so they live till 300. But so it's interesting that they are actually verbalizing feeling cheated because here they are, they're still able to play tennis, they're still able to be out in the world, and they feel like angry and sad. And the anger is actually coming up more now about having lost 7 months of their life mm-hmm. that they know they can't get back. So it's so interesting to hear you say that in terms of like the kids as well. I mean, people are, you know, when we think about it now in terms of the whole implications for mental health, we have to be so cognizant about the fact that we are like more than half a year now of somebody's life mm-hmm. that is just has this overlay of losses and forget about any other real issues, you know, any of the stuff they were dealing with before. I mean, this has brought itself all these losses. And I don't know, it was just poignant when you said that to me, Jeremy. I was thinking about if, you know, Lisa, your kid and my kids are older, right? So if you can imagine, like if your child were doing her senior year, I think about those kids who are doing their junior and senior years of high school. Those are the kids who I think about a lot. Now the little ones, I think about them too, but it's sort of different issues, you know. It's like, you know, it's sort of I've got a granddaughter who's 3, and she says things to me like, when the germs are gone, grandma, I can see you. You know, I mean, it's like she lives in a world where they're a little more germ phobic. And that's creates for kids who are anxious kids also. I was thinking about that piece of it. And then you know, it's just the implications across the age span developmentally are just tremendous.
Mm-hmm. I've been trying to make the point that our the hardest work for us as clinicians is not right now. It's going to be a year from now, or two years, 3 years from now, when this year, you know, because it's going to be a year that where there's all of the losses that have occurred, whether they be like emotional losses or losses in developmental milestones,
absolutely,
which get delayed, whether they be educational or physical or emotional, social, like milestones, all of these are being delayed right now. So these kids will be behind And so what we will be working on, not only with our own sort of like missed year that we have during COVID-19, like as professionals, we're going to be managing and working with that as with our clients later on. Like, we're going to be seeing kids who are educationally behind by no fault of their own, but everybody's going to be educationally behind. I mean, my own children.
But Jeremy, yeah. You heard what Dr. Dan said yesterday, which I thought was really amazing that he, I don't know if anyone else was on that webinar.
What was that? What was it, Lisa?
It was helping parents work with children who are at home, you know, basically. And he was saying a pandemic is a terrible thing to waste. And what he really was saying is that there's so many opportunities at this point in time to help kids develop resilient skills, you know, build character, you know, I don't know, decision-making skills. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities for kids to, you know, learn how to mutually, what else did he say? Make decisions and all sorts of things. I can't even remember. But
that's a great opportunity.
Listen to it. It was actually very good. The PowerPoint he didn't want to give us, but everything in the PowerPoint he said, and there were a lot of very important.
Is that on the? Is that recorded, Lisa?
Yeah, it's recorded under webinars, and you know, I found it very sort of fulfilling, and I enjoyed it, and I actually wrote some notes down, which I'm looking for right now, so I could tell you, but I don't. Them.
You know, that's the positive side of it in terms of the opportunities. But what Jeremy, what you're saying is also equally important to pay attention to, which is that these kids developmentally who need school to learn very specific social skills, they do not have that. They are missing out learning how to share, you know, with a group. But they're missing out learning how to be on a soccer team.
Yeah.
And how to lose,
yeah.
And how to, you know, and that, those are huge issues. Right.
So can I add another skill here, like a clinical piece, and just to share. So I was talking about my PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Like, I've been a video gamer pretty much my whole life. I've watched the development of video games. It's been really wonderful. And so I'm still a gamer now. I use video games as part of my practice. I've been doing that for the last 10 years or so. So what I've been doing to address that particular social issue, and I've been doing it for probably about 3 or 4 years now at this point, is doing these social skills groups. But it's now more important than ever, because these are kids who where I'm creating social skills opportunities in the context of playing Minecraft or playing Apex or playing Fortnite, where it's team building, it's communication, it's about relying on each other, it's about creating social dependency and trust with each other, albeit virtually. So I have licenses in, right now the kiddos that I'm seeing are in California, Idaho, Indiana, one's in Maryland right now. So I see these kids across in the social skills group. So they're playing video games with me, and their parents are paying me for this time when they know it's an hour and a half where their kid is on their screen, even though they've been on their screen for school all day long, but it's a different quality to it. So what I'm trying to do is take that place of organized sports and make it something that's virtual, but there's coaching involved, where I'm working with individuals on how to increase or enhance communication skills. Like, if one person's going to be more of a leader within our group, it's, so how are you barking orders, or are you taking a collaborative approach to like working our team so that we can reach whatever our goal is? If we're playing two different sides of a basketball game, like NBA, then it'll be like, so what does competition look like between groups? And what is the social skills that come up with when you, at the end of a game, when you're saying good game, or can you say good game to somebody, or hey, great shot, even though they're on the opposite team of yours? And then what does that look like and feel like? And all of those skills are generalizable to the real world, as long as they can start practicing that in the real world. But at least we can start to build those skills now, using a medium that they're already used to working on. So I've been a video gamer, so I've had that as part of my skill set. But a lot of these video games are very easy to pick up for anybody. It's just a matter of practicing and putting a little bit of work into it. But I would offer that I've been introduced to this game Fall Guys just recently. It's a silly, silly, silly game, but a lot of fun. And a client of mine who shared his screen, and we played this game, we ended up playing it together. And I downloaded it through Steam, and we were able to play it together. And this is the kiddo who had made that, who voiced to me like, oh man, I got to make sure that his younger brother was online all day long today. So he had to leave his class and to go check on his first grade brother in order to make sure that his kiddo had signed in to do the stuff, because his one caregiver had to be physically at work. And so later on, we were playing this Fall Guys game, and all of a sudden we're talking about how he's feeling isolated, but he's not talking about it initially. He's playing it out. The way you have to play Fall Guys is a collaborative type game, and he wasn't doing that. He was losing. And finally, when we got to this idea of like, oh, so you're feeling kind of alone. It feels like you're losing here a lot, and boy, that's really frustrating for you. And here I'm doing my best and trying to collaborate with you, and man, I'm at a loss. And so I'm just reflecting on the fact that he's stuck being so isolated and alone. And when he starts taking those steps, albeit in the virtual world, he then was able to connect it to, wow, I'm feeling really alone and isolated in my own family and with my own friend group. And we could start processing that both in play therapy, digital play therapy, but also kind of in our words every once in a while in reflections when he was able to do it. But we probably spent 10 minutes of speech and 40 minutes of like digital play, which I think was a great balance for what we were doing. And having so much happen in the small bits of verbalization, because it was really the play that mattered, and to see him to be isolated and then to see him work with me and then work with other players in this particular game was remarkable.
That's super Anyways. Cool.
That's Sorry, really that cool.
Too. I you think know what I'm thinking. I just want to say, you know, we have this annual conference coming up, as you may or may not know, in the spring, and yep. Hopefully we're going to have a lot of people because it's virtual, you know, happening. We could have some really great clinical sessions.
And I think it would be great to have a working virtually with kids session.
Yeah, working virtually, but like, I love that whole idea. I don't know how many of us know how to use video games. Look, I don't want to gender, you know, I don't know. I've never played a video game in my life except Pac-Man, and I'm sure that's really not what kids are playing now. But, you know, it would be very interesting to do that. I mean, maybe some of you are really good at video games, something Fall Guys that could be potentially something that we could all learn. What a great session.
It would be a wonderful session, and I'll volunteer to moderate it. Yeah. Love that session.
Right. Nice, Elaine. Thanks.
You play video games, Rachel?
No, I do not. No. I just had another thought. When we're talking about working with kids and working with kids and the idea that a pandemic is a time to teach kids resilience and blah, blah, blah. That's great. but parents are in deep, deep struggle right now. Yeah. And the idea that parents have anything left over at the end of the day to help kids with decision-making and resilience skills is like bonkers, because our parents are need right. support
so,
too.
So what I'm saying is that these activities work on both levels, that the parents have to do the same thing that the kids okay. have to do. And that's okay. what made it so interesting, because they're working on it together and
okay.
collaboratively so making decisions. And when kids are in such a rage, you know, he talked about this arc and that you have to wait till the kids come down before you and start to recover before you can begin to talk about things. You know, everyone has to walk away. Like it was, you know, it was really kind of simplistic, simple things, but not something you think about, but very manageable. Something skills that kids and parents can.
Well, that was gonna be my point, which is I think more than ever, and this is always my philosophy, but when you work with kids, you're working with parents.
Yeah.
And so with what we've been doing is really, and a lot of kids can't engage for 50 minutes on the screen. Yeah. They've been doing virtual school. So we've been doing like 30-20 where we are teaching the skills to the parent as well and really, really, really working on that buy-in, kind of like we were talking about before with the idea of like dropping the kid off in the room and really rethinking the way that we're doing that. And we're doing it also because the parents need those skills, the relaxation and the distress tolerance and all of that stuff too, because, and as much as we can, and we're able to do that, have the parent see her own therapist at JFS, and that works in our model, because oftentimes, you know, our parents are in so much struggle right now as well. It is an undoable task to have what they're expected to do right now. So.
I think what I really like, and I know we're going to be out of time soon, but I really like what I'm hearing today is, first of all, I so, I feel so much gratitude for everybody's like sharing and everything. But I also, there's before we stop, I just want to say a couple of things, but I want to know, we haven't heard, I want to give time for Karen or Marcy. You guys haven't, you know, if there's anything you want to share that.
I mean, this is great. I so appreciate everybody sharing the resources, because I think I just am going to echo the frustration. We have one therapist in particular who works for the most part with children under the age of 10. And we've been it's interesting. We've gotten a couple of referrals in a row for little five-year-olds who are just having meltdowns. And I talked to her about it, and because typically she loves working with those kids, and she's like, it's not working. She's like, just take their age and times it by two. That's the attention span.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I said, okay. You know, and that's,
well, that's a really good little nugget for us.
That's a little nugget. Take their age and times it by two. I like that.
Wow.
It seems.
Where have you been the whole meeting, Karen? That's like, you say, you know, you guys are, you know, clinicians, you know, the last 10 minutes. That's like that doorknob stuff. That's like,
I've been clicking on all these links. That's what I've been doing. But I think they're burnt out. They're on screens too. I know at the end of the day, like, I don't want to talk to anybody, and I don't even want to check. I don't want to watch TV. I don't want to do anything.
You're a zombie. That's what I call myself.
Exactly. Yeah. Marcy, is there anything you want to share with us?
Well, our focus at CGFS is older adults. However, one of our clinicians does specialize and focus on children and youth. We're just starting a collaboration with our local Jewish day school, something that they've put together to offer enhanced student support around everything that the kids are going through. The Jewish day school is providing in-person school with all the parameters and measures needed. So this is actually a nice opportunity because it is in-person. And we're just kicking this off, and it's part of this. It's a very modest program, really a couple hours a week. We are offering a few individualized meetings of our clinician with students, and should there be the need for continued services, we would then recommend to the parents accordingly.
I think what I really like admired today listening to all of you here, and it's really kind of inspirational, is, and I'm hoping, and I'm gonna hope that this like is what's happening like across the network, is really that it's not really business as usual. That the only thing that's business as usual is that we are still working with kids and families. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, I mean, it's kind of reinforced for me that even though the kids are, that we can't ignore the fact that they're in a new backdrop, a new, that in itself is bringing major challenges and developmental implications and all kinds of things on top of the regular issue of, can't you talk to my kid about getting along better with his sister? You know, I mean, it's this, and I suspect we're going to see the referrals more and more that come in always have to be taken into consideration now vis-a-vis the impact that this 6-7 months has happened. When you think about it in terms of a child's life, right? If you're working with, like, I'm not as good with numbers, but right? If you take a year out of a child, of a five-year-old child's life, that's 20% of their life was dealing with germs and pandemic, right? I mean, that's like, that's a big deal, you know? So, I just,
there's a generation of kids who grew up after 9/11, right? And this is a generation of kids who are growing up, you know,
absolutely,
after the pandemic, which is a whole different way of growing up, right?
It is a whole different way
than me or you, Elaine, or I don't know.
Yeah. I know people have to jump off. It's just really good seeing everybody.
It's great seeing everyone. So everyone,
thanks for sharing.
You do fast, have an easy fast, and see you the next time. I don't know what that date is, but you'll get
in sometime.
Okay.
See you later. Bye, everybody.